ser benfiquista é uma crença.
É uma religião muito grande.
A visão é um culto. É coragem, que é liberdade, que é crer, que é vontade, que é o caráter das pessoas.
Calma de quem é grande, maior que os maiores.
É uma paixão com pouca explicação.
Eu não consigo explicar o que é ser do Benfica. Eu sinto o que é ser do Benfica.
Mas de facto uma paixão. E as paixões são assim, vivem-se assim intensamente.
Aqui não há nenhuma razão. É paixão, paixão, paixão.
Ser Benfica.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Talking to the Doll Benfica podcast, episode number 315. Tonight, we come to you on the eve. It's not the eve, right? It's post-classico. So a very happy one. If you haven't been hiding under a rock, you know what's going on with the classico and with Porto. But before we get into it, let's introduce my peeps here. Next to me, Cristiano Oliveira. How you doing, Cristiano?
Fantastic. How's everyone doing out there today?
Up in the great white north, the better looking De Oliveira, Dave De Oliveira. What's happening?
Nothing much. The sun is shining. The palm trees are waving. It's a beautiful day to be alive, and especially if you're Benfiquista.
You're watching Miami Vice on TV or what?
Yeah, it's definitely not here in Canada right now.
It's definitely not here, Dave. Definitely not here. When it was dead cold winter, there was no snow. Now the spring is, you know, arriving. We get a couple snowstorms here back to back, so we feel a little bit like you guys do up north. But nonetheless, Benfica's winning, and I'll take it all day long, baby.
Yeah, and I know that we don't usually have a lot of guests, but tonight we do have a guest. Hugo is here. He was actually at the Dragão. Hugo is a friend of the podcast, a friend of Cristiano. Cristiano's and I. That's good English.
Sounds like a porno. Cristiano's and I. X-rated.
Hugo, what's going on, my brother?
How you doing, guys? Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. Been a long time listener. So really thrilled to be on.
Awesome.
Hugo Ferreira.
Hugo Ferreira. Epá,
throw the guy's name out there.
Não sei se o gajo quer que as pessoas saibam o nome dele. Não sei isso. Tens de perguntar primeiro. You not wanted by the law. I could have sworn you would have been in trouble at the Dragão in the middle of all those portistas.
Before we get to that, we're going to pull a little card here from our good friends at Benfica FM. Hugo, why don't you tell our loyal listeners, our beautiful fans, our beautiful listeners that we talk to here each week, why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself, how'd you become a Benfiquista? Just, you know, give us a little bit of the
Hugo Ferreira. You, Christian.
Yeah.
Well, how I became a Benfiquista, that's a tough one. I would imagine I was still in my dad's sack and I was already a Benfiquista. No, in all seriousness, it's part of the family. I have a great-grandfather that played for the club in the 40s and 50s. And then his son, my great-uncle, played on the Benfica reserves as well in the 60s during the Eusebio days and the Coluna days. Pois é, família.
You know what I noticed there, Hugo? That as the generations got older, the players got worse. You know, your grandfather played, your great-uncle played in the reserves, and then you didn't even play at all. I mean, yo, it just went downhill.
He plays in FIFA.
I blame my dad because he brought me to this country when I was a kid. If I was in Portugal, I would have been like a João Félix.
Hey, João Félix dos solteiros e dos casados.
Yeah, no, but that's a little bit about me. My dad's a diehard, my uncle's a diehard.
Hugo.
And you're a diehard also.
É de família. E já estou a passar para meus filhos também.
Mas os filhos têm competição, que a mulher é portista.
Não há competição. Aqui em casa não há competição.
I heard you brought your daughter a full kit, a full Benfica kit.
Yes, I did. It's her first kit. I got her the alternate kit for this season because the red was sold out, or else I would have bought both.
Yeah, from what I understand, your wife already put that in a machine with bleach.
I would probably kick her out of the house if she did that. That's good. An automatic divorce.
Good call. So with introductions out of the way, let's get right into the podcast. As I mentioned, Porto recap, Zagreb preview, and Bolonense preview is what we have on tap for tonight. So let's get into the Clásico. Benfica travel up north to play Porto with 1 point separating both teams. Benfica obviously with the chance to surpass Porto had they gotten a win, and they sure did. But before we talk about the game, let's get into the lineups. Vlaco Dimos in goal, André Almeida, Ruben Dias, Ferro, Grimaldo across the back. Gabriel and Samaris were the two middle pivots, if you will. Pizzi on one side, Rafa on the other side. Seferovic and Felix, that dynamic duo up front. Cristiano, I'll start with you, right? So heading into this game, how confident were you? I know that we spoke about this in the last podcast, but tell the people how confident you were.
Roll back the tape, baby, and you'll see that I was as confident as I've ever been going into the Dragão. I thought Benfica was going to find a way to come out of there with the 3 points, and that's exactly what they did. Bruno Lage has been absolutely magnificent, what he's done with this ball club here, injecting youngsters and going into very tough arenas, stadiums, whatever you want to call it, and getting the 3 points. As we mentioned before, goes into Turkey, gets Benfica's first ever win in Turkey, goes into Estádio do Dragão, comes away with the not just the 3 points, but the liderança and the Campeonato Português, first time in 15 match days that they regained first place again. It just, look, you got the youngest tandem ever. I mean, the youngest tandem of center backs to play Estádio da Luz since 19. I mean, Estádio do Dragão since 1991.
Usually you say Ladrão.
I do, but you know, whatever. We won. I don't even have to call them that. They tried their best to get in there and, you know, and squeak their ways through some bogus calls. But at the end of the day, Benfica was able to tough it out. Benfica went in there and played beautifully. Beautifully, absolutely beautiful. Got a little luck, but in times like this, you do need some luck sometimes to come away with the victory. That's exactly what they did. My confidence level was as high as it's been in a very, very long time. And again, how could you not be confident after what we've seen Benfica do under Bruno Lage?
Yeah, absolutely. Dave, how was your Saturday morning in the run-up to the 3:30 kickoff by Benfica? How was it? Were you relaxed? Were you anxious? Did you put on your lucky underwear? How was your Saturday morning?
My Saturday morning consisted of me going to the dentist, getting my mouth frozen, and then not being able to eat for a while. But then after that, I was as calm as I've ever been for a Clásico. Previous history shows that we had history going against us. But you know what? How the team was playing going into this match, I really had trust in Bruno Lage. And Cristiano talks about the players that he's brought in, but more than just the players, I think he's just changed the mentality of this side. Very calm, and they go in there with the mentality to go and beat a Porto. Usually, we have seen with other coaches, we go with the mentality to squeak out a draw and not play for the victory, but this team went into the Dragão and had the mentality to get the 3 points, and ultimately they came away with the 3 points. So
yeah.
Bonuses for us.
Yeah, let's get Hugo, who is at the game. He actually happened to travel from here, from the United States East Coast to Portugal midweek Wednesday. Was it Wednesday night that he traveled?
Correct.
And Hugo was actually, he was not in a cortejo. He traveled with a bunch of Portistas, surrounded with a bunch of Portistas. Hugo, tell us a little bit about, you know, have you ever been to the Estádio do Dragão?
Unfortunately, I had, because I have a direct family member who's a Portista.
Yeah.
So I had been there in the past, yes.
How was the run-up to a couple hours before the game? How was the atmosphere around the stadium? What were your feelings? Were you feeling confident even though you were surrounded by Portistas?
It's a fantastic atmosphere. Obviously, you have to live it. It's a unique experience, one that I recommend. It is an environment that as soon as you step foot in that city, you feel the hatred towards Benfica. Unfortunately, I actually didn't have a scarf or a jersey or anything. I just went, I rolled up as if I was a neutral fan, which, I mean, I don't think that that made a difference, because when they see you non-branded with the home team, they probably assume that you're not supporting the home team. But the atmosphere is fantastic. I got there about 3 o'clock, just five and a half hours before kickoff, and it was already packed on the outskirts of the stadium. I had the butterfly since the morning, to be completely honest, on the drive down. And I was just hoping that Benfica could grind out a result. I was confident, as long as there were no exterior factors to the game that we all know about, that Benfica could pull it off. Benfica's the better side, and they proved it.
Look, I speak to Hugo multiple times a day. Hugo on Saturday must have called me 50 times, and I was wondering about his long-distance charges there on his phone. and I kept telling him, and he's my witness, we're going to win this game, dude. forget it. And Hugo kept bringing up, as you mentioned, the exterior, other happenings of the game that have nothing to do with Benfica themselves. And I kept telling him, like, bro, I don't give a crap. We're going to make it through all that. And it was just a phenomenal feeling. As you guys mentioned, we all had goosebumps. We all had butterflies leading up to the game. When you see the teams come out, I was just nervously, anticipating this game, but confident. I was very confident. And I knew that this was a different Benfica. Don't get me wrong, guys. When they score the first goal, you start like looking around. But I said, all right, these guys are going to pick it up here. But nonetheless, very confident leading into this game. And it was just an unbelievable feeling, man.
Yeah, so the game basically, as expected, started with Porto with a little bit more of the advantage, if you will, or a mandar mais no jogo. But it's really normal, right?
I can't say as expected, because I honestly, believe it or not, I thought it would be totally opposite. I thought Benfica would get the first 15, 20 minutes because of all the hoopla and all the hurrah going around about Benfica, that they're this unbeatable team. I thought Porto was going to go into this game. I honestly did. I thought Porto was going to go into this game cautious, very cautious, see what Benfica put out and then test them out and then give them a few minutes to see what this new Benfica is capable of, and then attack. Obviously, it was the opposite. Porto came out guns blazing right in the very first minute. They had a scoring opportunity, but then things kind of calmed down. Benfica started playing a little bit better. Porto gets their early goal, and then it was just all Benfica.
And I would think that at the time that Porto got the goal, Benfica had already kind of balanced the game, and Benfica was creating their chances and was having their say. The goal comes off of a quick play by Brahimi. Ruben Dias takes out Brahimi right at the edge of the box. There, Adrian Lopez hits a free kick.
Hits the wall.
Comes back. He puts it back in. And to me, it really looked like Pep was offside. The angle is not the best angle from the TV, but it did look like he might have been offside. They went to the VAR and they validated.
Look,
I'll
say this. Initially, I left it open. I said, look, I think it could have gone either way with the offside call there, because I did not get a concrete view on exactly from the other side, I should say, on where exactly Pepe was. But today, some images surfaced on Twitter and other social media platforms that when what's his name? Adrian? Whatever.
Adrian.
The Gallego. Adrian kicks the ball back into the area, puts it back into the area, and it hits off of Marega's chest. And by the time the ball hits off of Marega's chest, Pepe is a foot and a half offsides by then, and then he ducks down. So that's a clear offsides. Yeah. I don't know how they didn't see it. I don't know how the Twitter investigators were able to catch that, but they did a great job and they
Twitter
caught it.
Investigators.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that is as clear as it's going to get. I actually had an argument with some Portistas, and they argue it's not offsides. But off of that image, the ball clearly comes off of Marega's chest. And therefore, Pepe's offside. There's no question about it, whether he's offside or not. So, I think, once again, Porto benefited from it. But again, guys, when the hell is a call going to go against Porto at home with the VAR situation? It's not going to go. It's not going to get a red card.
As expected.
Porto has not gotten a red card against Benfica since 2006 or something like that. Fucile was the last player to get a red card at home against Benfica. These things never go against Benfica. So, look, it is what it is. They got their goal. And then after that, it was just all Benfica. I'll let you guys give your thoughts. But I thought Benfica could have come away in the first half with a 3-1 lead. Pizzi should have done better. I mean, Seferovic should have absolutely done better. But to that point, it was all Benfica after that, and even in the early second half until they got the red card. I'll let you guys give your opinions, but I wanted to get that out the way.
Hugo, talk through your emotions when that Porto goal goes in, obviously surrounded by Portistas, the whole stadium explodes. But talk through your emotions. Did you feel, was there a sense of, okay, here we go again? Or at that point, did you still feel confident that was early enough that Benfica could scratch something back?
Yeah, no, I felt confident that Benfica could scratch something back. At the same time, it's a bit of a feeling of, oh, there we go again. Because as we all know, Benfica's history in Dragão, isn't the greatest. I think it's more mentally than anything when we go into that stadium. But it was a bit of both, to answer your question. when that goal went in, I immediately saw Samaris run towards Jorge and the rest of, Benfica just bombarded the ref. At the time, I got to be honest, I didn't know what was going on. I figured it had to be something to do with an offside, but I had no idea if it was, if it wasn't. In fact, I saw the play a day later, and I agree with Cristiano. on his opinion on the play. But to answer your question, yeah, there was still plenty of game left. I thought the goal happened a bit against the run of play.
Yeah.
To be completely honest, it was kind of a bang-bang goal, a fluke, if you call it, because it free kick hits off the wall, comes right back to him, which is unfortunate, and he just kind of I don't know what he's really trying to do there, if he's trying to put it on goal, or but it ended up in the back of Lakodim's net.
I think he was nervous, Hugh. I think he's just like, oh, what do I do with it? Hot potato, hot potato. Like, he just threw it back into the middle. That's what he looked like.
Yeah,
it was a bang-bang play. And listen, and it ended up in the back of our net, but our boys responded magnificently.
Yeah.
And it, I was just, again, I you know, in my young life, I'm 31. That was by far the most dominant and most aggressive performance I've seen Benfica play in that stadium, whether it be Dragão or Antas. Benfica went in there. You know, and just bawled eye to eye, and it was beautiful to watch, and I was privileged to be there,
yeah,
and see that in person. It was fantastic.
Yeah. So as Hugo said, Dave, João Félix gets us back on level ground in the 26th minute, and Félix got quite a few stats here that you brought up. You want to talk through that?
Yeah, for sure. So it's his 11th goal of the season. And just for some comparison between João Félix and Jonas, in big games, we know that Jonas tends to disappear. But João Félix, now in his fifth game between Sporting or Porto, now has 3 goals in 5 games compared to Jonas, who has 2 goals in 12 games. So I know we've discussed in the past that Jonas tends to shy away from these big games. And
yeah.
We want to talk about ball size. João Félix got a pack of balls on that kid, let me tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. And then even after that that encounter with Pep, which he didn't touch Pep, but Pep fronted him, João Félix, you know, didn't shy away. You know, it's just the kid has class, and he's also a kid that is not going to be intimidated.
Hugo told me, you got to see it up close and personal, that João Félix and Telles were going at it the whole time, talking back and forth, and Hugo sitting right there, and he's just amazed at how Félix was able to keep his composure, even though he had both of those guys in his ear, Pepe and Telles, constantly, you know, jabbing at him and trying to get him off his game. And look, he's tremendous young talent. The kid has balls of steel. Doesn't look like, you know, the moment's too big for him. He's able to play in front of anyone and everybody, no matter how big the pressure is, and he's just been fantastic. I gotta admit though, Dave, I hate that stat. I don't even like mentioning that stat. Different times, different game plan. Today, Benfica plays totally different than when Jonas was up there manning the front line by himself in these big games, where Rivi thought it was just to sit everybody back and to be besides two guys in between two center backs. It's a totally different Benfica today than what we saw with Rui Vitor. I think it's unfair to Jonas, but again, I understand the criticism. He hasn't scored in many big moments, but at the same time, I don't like that stat, because it makes it seem like the guy's not a big game player, and I totally disagree with that.
Cristiano, do you know how big João Félix's balls are?
How big?
They're so big, he could teabag Pep and Felipe at the same time. So halftime comes.
You came Benfica up with that on your own?
Yeah,
that
just now. halftime comes. Benfica up 1-1. Tied 1-1 into the locker room. Dave, what were your feelings at the locker room? You felt that with the run of play and how Benfica had been playing, you felt that Benfica was going to come out and they were going to turn this game around. What were your feelings at halftime?
At halftime, a lot more confident, if that was even possible. Compared to the start of the game, just the way the team responded after going down a goal early in the game, they completely once Porto went ahead, Benfica opened up, pushed forwards, started playing their own style of the game, and like Chris has already mentioned, Pizzi has a chance in the 22nd minute. Seferovic almost gets a goal there right at halftime, so I'm very confident going in at halftime, hoping that we should at least be up on the score line. But yeah, Benfica in the first half is dominating the possession, I believe, and they were also controlling the pace of play. So real good to see that, and was confident going into halftime.
Yeah, Hugo, after the João Félix's goal, was there, did the energy get sucked out of that stadium? Was there a feeling of pessimism by the Porto contingent?
completely. Foi balde d'água fria, as we say. I mean, it just sucked the whole wind out of that stadium, especially since Benfica then took the play on right after the goal as well. I mean, we could have been up 3-1 easily at halftime. So again, it was just fantastic to see the positivity in our football, the dominating play at our biggest rival's home. You know, and again, all the credit to me goes to Bruno Lage. There's something, obviously, the guy's doing, something he's saying in that locker room to motivate his players. He just like he did in Alvalade a few weeks ago, he came out actually when Benfica arrived. He was the first person that stepped foot on the pitch, and he got a huge ovation from No Name up there. The stadium was still kind of empty on the Porto side, and everyone just started chanting Lage's name. And from that moment on, Lage thanked the fans, took that picture that he did a couple weeks ago as well. I mean, the man is just calm, cool, collected. And yeah, he's just firing on all cylinders right now.
Ugo, let me ask you something. You were at the stadium, and there's been some stuff on social media that apparently, from what social media was saying, that Sport TV usually doesn't capture Benfica's fans. How was it in a stadium? Was that Benfica 2,500 contingent loud? Were they very, could you hear them pretty well from where you were?
Yes. Well, I was fortunate enough to be right under them.
There you go.
So I was soaking up all the chants. It was fantastic. But it was 90 minutes of pure Benfiquism coming from that that upper tier in Estádio do Ladrão. It was just fantastic to be a part of. And obviously seeing those people then leave with that Malone at the end of the game was priceless for me. I actually stayed in that stadium until all those guys left. That's how happy I was. I wanted to make sure. Go ahead.
I also heard that after all the Porto fans left, Benfica, as you know, Benfica's contingent waits for all the Porto's fans to leave.
And yeah, not Benfica's contingent, it's police that makes them stay in the stadium until everyone's clear.
They have to stay there, but they remained singing. And apparently the Porto PA system raised up their volume so Benfica fans couldn't be heard. I don't know if you can confirm that.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely correct.
Yeah. So coming back from the half.
Just want to add to Hugo's part, because I was at the last year's game at the Stade de Luz for Benfica Porto, and it was the complete opposite, where our fans were outsung by the Super Dragões. So just from watching it on the TV perspective, you could definitely hear the No Name boys and the Benfica contingents in the stadium. And it was yes. Yes, we don't shy away from both. But huge respect for those guys who went out there, sung their hearts out, and made me very proud, because I've been on the other end of that, where at home we were outsung by the Porto fans. So big props to the fans that went and sang their hearts out.
Yeah, absolutely. So Benfica comes out of the locker room and really hit the ground running, just like they had finished the half. And it wasn't too long before Rafa found the back of the net. Cristiano, were you surprised at all that Rafa was able to find the net?
Listen, that was impressive. For a guy that we criticized so much, or I should say I criticized so much, that he couldn't score at a whorehouse with a stack of hundreds, he found a way to find the net, and it was beautiful. It was just beautiful to see the celebration. And if you guys noticed, I don't know if you caught it on TV, but the guys weren't pleased with just the 2-1 lead. They were celebrating after, like, let's go, vamos por mais. Look, this team was very motivated, man, and very inspired to get the 3 points and retake the lead. And it was just beautiful to watch. Rafa, phenomenal. It was just, I mean, look, I mentioned last week here on the podcast that he's Benfica's most dangerous player. Doesn't necessarily mean he's the best player, but he's the most dangerous player, because you can't teach speed, and that always gets the other team off balance. And that's exactly what he did. He had that one chance and he put it away. Credit to him. He had another chance a couple minutes later and he shot it just wide. And that's more what we're accustomed to. But we got to praise him for that one he got on net. And, you know, it's his 13th goal of the season. I think it's the most goals he's ever scored in his career in any single season. So this guy is finally showing everyone why Benfica paid $16 million for him, which is still till this day a transfer record between a Portuguese club to Portuguese club in the league. So phenomenal job by him. And phenomenal job by everyone else. I mean, there's plenty of players that you could praise. Your Samaris, a guy who I've said plenty of times that He's not necessarily caliber for, you know, to be starting 11. He had a phenomenal game. Just that one cort, that one interception or deflection, I should say, late in the second half where Herrera was behind him, where he's able to intercept, get his foot on the ball and deflect it out for a corner. That right there was worth his whole salary for the year. I thought Ferro was absolutely phenomenal, taking on the very physical play of Marega. I thought Ferro was the best player on the pitch, aside from who, in my mind, my estimation, was the best player on the field until he got a red card, and that was
Gabriel.
I thought he was man of the match. But once he gets the red card, I thought Ferro overtook that, and I think he's just, for a youngster, a guy who, look, man, Alfredo, you and I have been at this for a long time.
Yep.
And you know very well that I don't mind eating crow, and especially when it benefits my team and I'm wrong. I love it. I love it. I love to be proven wrong, and I got to eat crow. I've said it countless times that I don't think Ferro was anything special. I don't think Ferro could play at this level. He looks too stiff. You know, he's not athletic enough. But this guy is just, he's been phenomenal. I mean, the guy is a lot better with the ball at his feet than I ever anticipated. He's very physical. He's fast. There's nothing that this guy can't do. Yep. And then you pair him alongside Ruben Dias, who I thought Ruben Dias was better. Ruben Dias still, to me, is quicker and brute. A little bit more aggressive. He doesn't have the feet. This guy has been a pleasant surprise, along with Florentino, along with all these kids who are coming up from the B team. But in this game, you have to tip your cap to who had phenomenal games. Almedinos, he had a good game as well. You have to, you know, praise the guy. But
yeah,
Ferro to me was the one that stood out the most.
There's a pass by Ferro in the first half where he hits the ball without hitting the ground with the outside of his foot, and he puts maybe a 30 to 40 yard pass into the attacking half for I forget if it was Jean Felix or
Seferovic. Yeah,
but that was impressive. There's not a lot of guys that have that type of technique and that type of courage to attempt like that, and especially playing in a big game like this. I thought that he did well, and I agree with Cristiano as far as the feet, much better feet than Ruben Dias.
Oh yeah, much better feet than I ever anticipated. And I got to look. What was I going to say? I lost my train of thought.
You eat crow all the time.
No, something else. Oh, here it is. Benfica won this game 2-1 in a very convincing fashion until the 78th minute, until realistically when Gabriel got the red card, things kind of changed. But Benfica's, before Gabriel got sent off, they were already playing with 10 men, because I thought, look, and I'm not criticizing the guy. The guy's been overused and he's been, you know, played a lot of minutes and he's probably just fatigued. But Seferovic, after he missed that one chance late in the second half, the guy was non-existent. He was to the point that he was just backing up into Felipe and Pep on long balls, wasn't even attempting to jump, wasn't even putting an effort. You could tell he was very tired. And unfortunately, Jonas is not 100% healthy and they didn't make that sub. But I thought Seferovic, this is the worst game I've seen Seferovic play this all season. So I was just upset that the guy getting a red card wasn't Seferovic, because to me, he was out of the game already. Because once Gabriel gets the red card, we went down to 9 men.
Yeah, no, I look, it's just the type of play that Benfica plays. There was very high pressure from Benfica early on, and both João Félix and Seferovic run a lot. Seferovic is not really known for his work rate, but he has kind of added that wrinkle to his skill set after Bruno Lage took over. And look, these are guys, they just run. They cover ground. They defend. They're the first line of defense and Porto's first line of transition. Both him and Félix, I thought by the end of
very
the game, they were burnt
styles,
out.
Very different styles, though. Very, very different styles. Benfica tries to play out the back, tries building up play, tries to get lanes involved, get, you know, different sectors of the game, where Porto is very direct. Porto gets the ball, and it's up to Marega, and tries to get Marega hold up play and get his teammates on, and then he lays it off. It's a very different style of playing, and unfortunately for Porto and unfortunately for Benfica, they weren't able to overpower Benfica with that physicality, because the likes of Ferro and Ruben Dias, they could stay step for step with the Marega, even though I'll say Marega, his teammates are like they were in third gear. My man was in seventh. I mean, Marega, dude, for a guy who hasn't played in 2 months, that was freaking, the guy fit.
That horse that's placenta that, did wonders.
That's that magical vacina that you take in the vein.
I want one of those magical vacinas, but
yeah. Anyway, and I can imagine if at the 1-1, if that the 1-1, the energy got sucked out of the stadium, I can imagine what that was like at the 2-1, man, especially with Benfica coming out and playing the way they did and then scoring that second goal to basically complete the reviravolta.
Yeah, at the 2-1, the crowd, you know, you could sense that the crowd started to turn a bit on the home team, and that, and obviously the players feed off of that. And again, I thought, I agree with what Chris was saying, until the 78th minute, again, I thought Benfica was closer to getting a 3-1 than the game going to a 2-2. Mm. And then once Gabriel gets the double yellow and gets sent off, then the game, I was just hoping and praying that the final whistle would blow as soon as possible. And then when Jorge Souza gifted them a free kick at the top of the box in the 94th,
yeah.
I couldn't bear to look. I couldn't bear to watch that play. But yeah, no, for, you know, players feed off of that, and the crowd definitely got anxious.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it played to Benfica's advantage as well.
Yeah. And Gabriel picking up the red card, and obviously Benfica was going to go on a defensive after that. It's seventh red card. Thanks to Dave for looking that up. Seventh red card for Benfica this season. And in years past, where we've always heard that, oh, Benfica doesn't get any red cards, blah, blah, blah. It is the seventh red card this season for Benfica. So that argument is dead in the water this year. But look, a bunch of players coming up big, especially on defensive end. And Dave, Vlaco Dimos was excellent.
Yeah, I know Chris has already mentioned Ferro, Ruben Dias, and Samaris, but we can't forget Vlaco Dimos. Huge saves there right at the end of the match. I know from Philippe's shot right outside the box, that thing was going straight in, and makes that save. And then the corner that follows that, Merega doesn't get his strongest touch on the ball, but it's still a shot on goal. And Vlaco Dimos is able to save that, and just really came up big, because I know in the past, I don't know if Bruno Varela would have been able to save any of those chances, but we got to give credit where credit's due, and Vlaco Dimos really came up big with some clutch saves at the end. Yeah,
six saves in a match, five of which came in the second half, Dave, from you.
Yep, not from me, from Vlaco Dimos.
Right, yeah, that's a stat from you, though.
That's correct.
So, huge 3 points for Benfica that allow us to leapfrog Porto and the table. Cristiano, we spoke about what kind of mental edge this would give either team if the result were to go this way. How are you feeling about that? How do you feel this leaves both Porto and leaves Benfica? How do you what kind of mental state do you think this result leaves each team in?
I think Benfica right now is in cloud nine. I think, you know, obviously the toughest game of the season for them is going into the Dragão and at any time, any season. And they were able to go in there and play very good football when they had 11 guys. Obviously, I had to defend and backtrack a lot when they were down to 10. But Benfica was able to impose their football, was able to do whatever the hell it was that they wanted to do. And I think right now they're sky high. I think you know, only themselves could trip themselves up. I don't think it's going to be any team in the Portuguese league that's going to be able to do it unless they themselves don't perform to the level that they're expected to perform. Porto on the other side, it's devastating. Obviously, you lose both games of the season to Benfica in a Campeonato, I should say. They lose both games. And, you know, it's never pleasant to lose and then give up the leadership of the Campeonato. But that being said, look, let's be realistic about things. I think Porto now falls 2 points behind Benfica, and they'll be ready to pounce on any slip-up that Benfica has. And I don't think it's, you know, it's the end of the Campeonato, as a lot of people are saying. There's still 10 games to be played. And I think Sergio Conceição and the Portistas and directors are telling their players exactly that, and to be ready and play their best football. I know they're you know, they must have lost some confidence because of this performance. But again, there's plenty of season to be had, and you know, anything that can help them on the sidelines will be on their side. And I think that it's, you know, it's up to Benfica now. It's really up to Benfica now, because if they don't win the Campeonato, it'll just be three meaningless points at the Dragão. I think they absolutely have to come out, play their best football. I think Bruno Lage will have these guys ready with rotations and motivation, because obviously anyone could play at any moment on this roster. So look, different ends of the spectrum, but I still think that the mentality on both sides still gunning for that first place.
Yeah, and Hugo, Cristiano talks about confidence, right? So we got 4 months in the beginning of the season where the team's not playing the best football in the Rui Vitória. They're kind of, you have to think that this team is kind of doubting themselves. Obviously, the players They're professionals. They've been at this for a while, and are guys that perhaps don't lose a lot of confidence. But the way they've been playing and the results, and kind of absolutely trusting Bruno Lage in what he's had him done, a lot of these players, the confidence level on a lot of these players is like times 10. Now that Bruno Lage, how do you think this boost of confidence with Bruno Lage and the way the team is playing, where the team feels they're almost unbeatable, will suit them for the rest of the season, for the rest of the 10 games?
No, it's very important, and it's at an all-time high. I think the biggest key to Lage is that he has 25 players who believe in him and his system. Whereas in years past, well, let's reflect on early on in the season. I mean, Rui Vitória's lineups were 13, 14 guys, no more than that. There was no rotation, not even in League Cup games. So that's the biggest element that I believe Bruno Lage brought. You look at the resurrection of Samaris, for example, which is a player that I love. You look at João Félix, who's now João Félix mais 10 every lineup. Even Florentino coming in. I mean, the kid looks like a stud. Obviously, Fer, to me, is going to be a player that we're going to speak about for a long time. I hope it's in a Benfica jersey, but obviously that's probably not realistic. And then even André Almeida looks like a different player, to be completely honest. And obviously Sferovic is dangerous in scoring goals. So I believe that's what Lage brought, is that element of locker room unity, the element of every player is important, and he proves it. And I think he's going to prove it again on Thursday, because I think he's going to rotate some members of the squad for Thursday's game.
Yeah, and Dave, 9 straight wins under Lage, 9 recuperated points since Lage took over. A different attitude, but there's a lot more here. You have a bunch of stats here. From Benfica hadn't beaten Porto in both stages of the campeonato since 2005-2006. What else?
They also hadn't beaten Porto and Sporting away in the same season since 1990-91. Some comparison. Bruno Lage against Porto and Sporting, 3 wins, 1 loss in 4 games. And it took Rui Vitória to get 3 wins. It took him 16 games. So he had 3 wins, 7 draws, and 6 losses. So just to kick the man when he's still down. So.
Well, the one negative, though, and I'm sorry to be the person to always trying to put out the flames here, but the one negative of that 2005-2006 season, Benfica beat them twice, but they wound up taking the Caneco home. So let's make sure that doesn't happen again this season, because, again, it'll be all for naught.
Yeah, as you guys could tell, Cristiano is staying very subdued and calm. He knows that probably the one of the hardest parts is accomplished, but there's still a long way to go with 10 within jornadas left.
As we all should, because, you know, the season is definitely not over. There's still a lot of hard games to come up. We got Morientes away in a couple of weeks, and that's going to be a tough match too. And we got to go to Braga still. So
yeah,
it's going to be hard not to be to be joyful in this occasion, right? But there's still 10 matches left. And just as quickly as we turn it around, it can go the other way around too.
You can never relax, because the fruta is going to be in full effect.
The fruta, yes. And the maleta.
Yes, Hugo, I'm glad you said that, because I didn't want to say
the fruta and the maleta.
Nós nunca nos podemos esquecer desses fatores.
Claro, tem razão. But look, to me, obviously, the 3 points is very important, right? I think, you know, going into the Dragão, as we mentioned and as we've all talked about here, confidence-wise and mentally-wise, it's phenomenal. But to me, as a fan, it was just, look, 3 points are important, but the way Benfica was able to impose their football and the way Benfica have played under Bruno Lage, that's what I'm most confident about. You know what I mean? They could have came away with a draw and I still would have been confident had they played the same way. It's the way that the attitude, it's the way that they're playing. I mean, this is not a guy that is scared to attack. You saw Benfica's down to 10 men and he doesn't all of a sudden start throwing in defensive-minded players. He makes like-for-like substitutions. And it's like you start asking yourself, like, what are you doing? Florentino's a defensive player and you're still on the side. And he's ignoring that. He's ignoring what we've been grown, you know, what we've grown to see or so accustomed to see at Benfica. And, you know, and it's just, he's going against the grain, and it's been absolutely beautiful to see. So I think, yes, I'm staying very low key, but I'm very excited deep down inside at the way that this club's playing football.
Absolutely. 3 points in a bag. And now we turn our attention to the Europa League, the match that comes up this Thursday against Dinamo Zagreb of Croatia. Benfica will travel to Croatia to play Dinamo on Thursday, 12:55 Eastern Standard Time. That is 5:55 or almost 6 o'clock Portuguese time. Zagreb is first domestically, 14-point lead over second place in the Europa League. 5 wins, 2 ties, and 1 loss. They only lost once, and that was to Pleasant in the previous round. But this is a team that there's not much that we know about this team. They've been dominant in Croatia, and these are sometimes the teams that create a surprise because nobody really knows much about them.
They have some caliber players, and I think that they could, you know, pull off a surprise. But at the end of the day, I think Benfica has the obligation, as I've said here for countless years now on the podcast, they have the obligation to go into Zagreb and come away with the victory and a nice lead going back to Stade Luce to close it out on the second leg. One of the few things I know about Zagreb is that they've threatened the Benfica supporters, and that's split as welcomed them and said that they support, you know, they'll help them out in whatever it is they need. So
yeah,
that's all I need to know. And I know they've won titles 12 out of the last 13 years or whatever. So they're, you know, the most dominant club in their own league with Croatia, right? They're from Croatia, Yugoslavia,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Inglaterra. I don't even know where they're from.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. There's a huge relationship and brotherhood, if you will, with Ajduk Split, which is Zagreb's rival, and Benfica, right? This remotes back into the 90s, where Benfica lost a fan from a trip back from Croatia, if I'm not mistaken, and forgive me if I got that wrong, but I think I have it right. So there's always been a very strong connection between Ajduk and Benfica. As a matter of fact, last time we were in Portugal, Chris, and this is quite a bit ago, I don't know if you remember meeting that Croatian guy with João and Manel, that had traveled to Portugal and to watch Benfica.
The guy goes to Portugal multiple times a year. He's a huge Benfiquista. It was impressive to see these guys being so devoted to the club like that.
Yeah, so the Hajduk fans, obviously being that they're rival and being that there's a brotherhood with Benfica, there's obviously a very tense atmosphere here and some security issues that may arise. I'm pretty sure that there's a small contingent of Benfica fans traveling, but just be safe out there. And look, to me, this is a game that Benfica should win. Hugo, how are you feeling about this game?
Yeah, I'm feeling confident. Again, I think Bruno Lage is going to rotate the squad a bit. I expect maybe guys. I think Krovinovic is definitely going to play. He's coming home in front of his family. He was formed at Dinamo Zagreb. I expect Zivkovic to get some minutes. So I think again Lage is going to do a rotation of the squad, and we should come away with a victory. A couple away goals in our belt would be massive. So I don't expect anything less than a win against Dinamo Zagreb. I thought we had a favorable draw when the opponent came out. But as we all know in football, it's important not to underestimate your opponent and to show on the pitch that you're the better side. But with that said, again, I definitely expect an away victory on Thursday.
Dave, you share the same feeling?
Share the same feeling, but you know, anything can happen, especially when we go away to clubs. Benfica's never won in Croatia in their history. They've only played there twice, so they've got 2 draws. But yeah, I'd expect some rotation, and who knows, maybe we get to see some more playing time for Jota, because he hasn't, I think he came on as a sub, made his debut, but this would be a game that I'd like to see Jota get some more minutes in.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we'll just have to see Thursday. As I mentioned, Benfica will play Dinamo Zagreb, early game of the Europa League game. So make sure you catch that. After Thursday, Benfica will play Belenenses, and that comes up on Monday, 8:15 at Stade Luce. And what's going on with Belenenses this year, Dave?
They currently sit seventh with 36 points from 9 wins, 9 draws, 6 losses. So for a team that's been in turmoil between the SAD and the club, They've actually been playing decent football and playing seventh. They've already beat us once this year, 2-0 at the Jamor. So that's a game after we beat Porto 1-0 at home. This should be a reminder for us not to take them softly, because they've already beat us 2-0 this season. And we got to go in there confident and respect them, but still go out and play our style of football.
Yeah, and they've beaten Braga at the Pedreira, I think maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. But this is a team in the last 5 away games, 2 wins, 1 tie. I'm sorry, 2 wins, 1 tie, and 2 losses. So you know, their coach is Silas, who has them playing a very good football. And despite all the turmoil that they've had between the club and the SAD, and playing at the Jamor and playing at the Estoril and playing elsewhere, I mean, they've been doing pretty good.
Yeah. Whatever. Enough of bubbleness. Benfica's playing at home. They just beat Porto on the road. If you want to be taken seriously, they have to win this game at home. And I'm ultra confident, because it is at the start of the lose. They don't have to play on that potato field that they played against whatever the hell it was. There was llama everywhere. I think it was Stubble, if I'm not mistaken. Start of the lose. Now, playing that start of the lose behind their 55,000+ fans, I think Benfica will be motivated, especially after this huge win at the Ladrão. It'll be exciting times. Benfica's going to score 4 or 5 and come over with 3 points and just run right over them.
Ugo.
Yeah.
Four or five or six or seven.
Only we'll see on Monday, but I definitely expect Benfica to have a comfortable victory at home. Morale is high with the squad rotation. Everyone should be fresh. I believe that's a Monday night game, correct?
Yeah, that's Monday. Yeah. Yep.
So, I expect a nice, comfortable win, but you never know. Anything can happen. You guys are spot on. Bulnes just coming in with morale high. They just beat Feyenoord 4-0, I believe.
Kika scored a couple goals, I think.
Yes, correct. Silas is an attacking-minded coach, although I don't think he's going to play eye-to-eye with Benfica and Luz. He'd get 10 like Nacional.
Yeah.
but I expect a comfortable victory.
Yep. Turning our attention to now a couple little bits of information. Benfica did publish their contas. And I won't go into the contas, because first of all, I know Jack about contas y relatórios and budgets and whatnot. What we were able to take away was that Benfica confirmed signing Caio Lucas, Cristiano, a Brazilian forward that's been playing in the Middle East, that Benfica snapped up, as the Relatório Contas shows.
Yeah, but that was announced already a while back.
Well, it wasn't confirmed. It was announced when it confirmed.
He himself had confirmed it.
Well, not everybody's got the inside sources like you do. It was mentioned on the paper, but...
Yeah, the baller. That's my inside source.
Yeah.
You had mentioned it before.
Yeah, cool. And in other news, the no-name boys just turned 27 yesterday. So nice. Congratulations and parabéns.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. And what else? And that's pretty much it. We want to, before we jump though, I just want to speak about this new project that's came up. So if you guys are not aware, we'll make you aware now. We are now very happy and proud to be part of Benfica Independent. And Benfica Independent is basically an aggregation of all these Benfica projects, independent Benfica project, both on a podcast level, photography, texts from people. When I say texts, I mean
Sem cartilha.
You know, posts from people that are influenced by the club, right? And there's a few other things. There's Marcus Horn is writing a version in German.
Marcus Apito.
Marcus Horn is writing a version in German. There's game previews. There's game recaps in Portuguese.
It goes a little like project. This. It's the whole shebang. Whatever you want about Benfica, that's where you got to go to. And I'm sorry, SOB, but this is, you want anything on Benfica, opinion, stats, facts, whatever the hell it is about whatever sport, we're going to have a modalidades involved in here. Obviously, no thanks to me. But it's basically a one-stop shop for everything Benfica, and it's going to be very exciting. Obviously, we're there. Benfica FM, Conversa Benfica. Come on. Who else?
There's four. Memoria Gloriosa.
Memoria Gloriosa. My man Baqueiro does a phenomenal job. And then a bunch of other opinion pieces. It's just phenomenal. We love if you guys support it. Follow it on Twitter, Benfica Independent. Follow it on Facebook. Follow it on Instagram. Follow it on YouTube. It's just going to be phenomenal. Plenty of projects. Obviously, our new baby, Time Added On, will also be on there. So make sure you check out my beautiful face. That's what my mom says. check it out and leave us your feedback, because we're always interested in knowing what it is that you guys think. And obviously, get involved. So give us topics, give us your opinion, and we'll make sure to get back to you guys.
Yeah, there's quite a few people that write very well that have been posting very, very good texts.
I'm not
on their emotional texts. Stuff that you could tell that the Benfiquismo oozes through their pores. There's also a very cool feature by Nuno Pereira. He is the one guy that perhaps owns the most Benfica jerseys that I know. And so he has a feature, I think it's a weekly feature, in which he shows a jersey from his collection, and there's a whole story behind it. So definitely follow that. Definitely go check that out. BenficaIndependent.com on Twitter at SLB Independent, and Instagram, look for Benfica Independent. Facebook, look for Benfica Independent, so on and so forth. So we're very excited to be part of that. So definitely check that out. Ugo, before we go, any parting thoughts from you, man?
No, I just wanted to thank you guys for having me on again. It's a pleasure. I listen to you guys all the time. Keep up the good work. And Carrega Benfica.
We'll get you in a building one of these weeks. We'll get you in here.
When your wife lets you.
No doubt. Yeah.
Dave.
Well, I just wanted to give you guys a shout out. I watched your show there. I didn't know if I was watching Kornheiser and Wilbon, but you guys were... You guys were great. Big fan of it. And
I'm easily Kornheiser with the comb over. Easily to identify. That's me.
I wouldn't even know who those two guys are. But that's okay.
Pardon the interruption.
Oh, okay. Interruption. That's the guy's name? All right, everybody. Thank you so much for checking us out. We will be back next week. Next week we'll recap both the Zagreb and the Bolonense game. And we'll look ahead to the second half of the second leg of the Zagreb and whatever Benfica has coming up next weekend. So thank you so much, and talk to you again next week.
Arrivederci.
Later.